Daf Kuf Yud Amud Beis, about, I would say, a little bit more than halfway down the Amud, and you'll see a line that starts with the word Li Olam, and then the two dots. Li Rei Kona, and we're talking about a healing jaundice, then you make up a potion, Train B'Shikra Umiyaker, and it should be made up of two out of three ingredients. The ingredients that we mentioned were Alexandrian sap, alum, and saffron. And these two ingredients out of those three have to be mixed with beer. And we have to be very careful about this potion because it could make the person sterile. As an alternative for jaundice, Lese Resha de Shibuta de Milcha, he should take the head of a salted shibuta, which is a kind of a fish. You may remember the Gemara at the beginning of the second parak of Kiddushin speaks about Rava, who would salt the shibuta in honor of the Shabbos, that fish. V'lishlok b'shikrat, he should boil it in beer, v'lishte, and he drinks this potion. Elo, and if that doesn't work, then lise monine de kamtze, he should bring a juice of locusts, vileka monine de kamtze, if there's no juice of locusts, lese monine de nekire, he should bring the juice of a small bird, vili aile lebe bone, and he should take the patient to a bathhouse, vilishpe, and smear this juice on him, vileka be bone, and if there's no bathhouse accessible, then lukme be tanure leguda, he should stand up the patient between the oven and the wall, and the heat is going to make him shvitz. Rashi says the disease will leave his body with his perspiration. Amar Rabbi Yochanan rotze shiyachamimenu, if he wants to warm up the patient so that he'll shvitz, yikanchenu Bisdino, he should wrap him up well in a sheet, in a sadin. And once he starts schwitzing, hopefully he'll get rid of this jaundice. Today they have another method of therapy with pigeons, if you know. Rav Acha bar Yosef Choshbe. Rav Acha never suffered from this disease, which is called Yekona, which is jaundice. Ovid Le Rav Kahana. Rav Kahana used one of the above recommendations. I'm not sure which prescription he used. Vitase, and he was cured. Elo, if none of the above cures work, Lysa Tlusak Pizi, he should bring three vessels, each of which that hold three lugim. Tamre Parsiosa, and he should fill these three lugim vessels with Persian dates, utlasak pize, and three lugim utensils, and fill them up with the kira, the nishtrufe, some sort of wax that drips from a honeycomb, utlasak pize ahola de tolana, and three of these vessels full of red alloy, and v'lishkalu b'shikra, you should again boil them all in beer and drink them. Elo, if that doesn't work, is lese ilo bar chamra, you should bring a foal of a donkey, v'leglalach mitziasa deresha, shave the middle of the patient's head, v'lishbik le doma me'apurse, you should draw blood from the forehead of this donkey, Velosfe Reshe, put the blood on the shaved part of the patient's head, Velihezer Me'ene, however, be careful that the blood doesn't go into his eyes, Delolisame Luhu, it shouldn't blind. And if that doesn't work, Ve'ilo, then Lese Resha Debarcha, he should bring a ram's head, the main up a kivsha that has been pickled, probably in vinegar or some salty brine. And lishlok b'shikra, again, boil it in beer v'lishte and drink it. Ilo, if that doesn't work, leisei dover acher chutuna. He should bring something else, meaning a swine, and it should be speckled v'likre, and he should tear it open v'losvei alibe, and he put it on the patient's heart. Ilo, if that doesn't work, leisei karte. He should bring leeks, which is a vegetable, mikav tusa demeshre, from the middle of the row. In other words, the leeks that grow in the middle row are the sharpest, Rashi says, and he should eat the leeks. Ahu taya de choshbe, very often the Gemara speaks about this Arab, sort of like a nomad Arab, and the choshbe, he was also suffering from this disease, from this jaundice, amale leginai, he said to a gardener, Shkol glimai, take my cloak. I guess he was paying him for his work. Vahavli, mishra de karsi, and give me this juice from the leeks. Or perhaps a row of leeks. Yovle, the gardener, gave him a row of leeks. Viachol, he ate it. Amarle, the Arab, said to the gardener, Ushlam glimach, lend me your cloak. In other words, the cloak that the Arab had given him, lend it back to me, the egne bei kali, and I'm going to sleep in it a little bit. Ikrach ganabe, he wrapped himself in the cloak and he slept in it. Kad icham v'kam, he became hot, he woke up. Nafal purta purta mine, the cloak fell away from him in small pieces, bit by bit. In other words, the disease was burnt out of his body. And he was so full of hot perspiration that he destroyed the cloak. Doesn't say whether he paid him back for that. Anyway, Liarakona trained b'shikro miyaker. For healing jaundice, the potion, we said, should be comprised of 2 out of 3 ingredients mixed with beer. And it's dangerous. Umishari, are you allowed to drink this potion if it might cause him sterility? Vasnanya, we have a brice. Minayim l'serus b'yodim shu also. How do we know that causing sterility in a person is a violation of a lav d'oraisa Talmud Lomar? And we derive this from the pasuk in Vayikra Chav Beis. It says there, ubi artzachem lo sasu. In other words, there it's referring to animals, that you're not allowed to castrate an animal. And we're going to interpret it as bochem lo sasu, because the end of the word biartzachem is bochem lo sasu. In other words, even people are enjoined from this act of causing sterility or castration. Divrei Rabbi Chanina, that is the view of Rabbi Chanina. So in the pasuk itself, the Torah says that castrated animals on a list of various psulei amukdashim are not allowed to be offered as karbonos. And then it says, ubi artzchem lo sasu, which means it's prohibited to castrate those species that could be brought on the mizbeach, like izim or sheep and so forth and so on. And according to Rabbi Chanina, we're going to extend this pasuk to include people as well. So the word bi'artzachem, in your land, seems to be inappropriate, because this prohibition of castration applies even outside of Eretz Yisrael, and it's a mitzvah she'ena tuya b'karka listed in the Mishnah in Kiddushin Lamed Vav. So therefore, we have an extra word, and we're going to take the word Eretz, and that means anything in the land, even a species of animals that cannot be brought on the Mizbeach, like, for example, dogs, even those you're not allowed to castrate. And then it says Bam in the word Artzachem, or Chum, I should say, Chaf Mem, and that applies even to you, meaning to people. Hani mili hecha deka mechaven. So Gemara says, that you only violate this lav if you have definite intention to destroy the reproductive organs. But hachame atzmohu, here he's taking it to remedy himself from jaundice, and the castration happens by itself. And since he's taking this portion in order to heal himself from jaundice, he has no intention to castrate himself, then we apply the principle of Rav Shimon, a davar sheni miskaven. But the problem is that this might be a psik resha. And in a case of psik resha, Rabbi Shimon is moda that davar sheni miskaven is also. And that explains the Gemara's kasha mishari. Now, the Torah is saying something about the nature of this lav. And this might apply even according to Rabbi Yehuda, who holds davar sheni miskaven is usur, and that is that the Torah forbids castration if it was performed directly for the purpose of destroying the reproductive organs. The Amar of Yochanan, now the Gemara brings a proof that indirect castration is permissible. Harotza Shiyasaris Tarnagol, if he wants to castrate a rooster, Yitol Karboloso, he removes the carbolus, that's the crest on top of the rooster, Umistaris Me'elov, and it becomes castrated on its own. Once the rooster is deprived of its carbolus, then it's incapable of copulating. And this is indirect castration. So the Gemara rejects this and says, Omar of Ashi, remus rochahu dinakitole, which means remus rocha, that's the air of a person is raised up, literally, which is an idiomatic phrase for arrogance. So the rooster is seized by arrogance when it's adorned with the crest. When this source of its pride is removed, and it grieves over the loss of this pride, it refrains from copulation. It's not actually castrated. It's physically capable of copulation, just not psychologically. So we don't really prove anything from Yochanan about Sirus, because this is not Sirus. The animal is still capable of copulation and procreation. So the Gemara has no basis for asserting that indirect castration is permissible, and therefore we're left with the kasha. How can we allow this person who needs this potion because of his jaundice, when it creates sterility, how is he allowed to drink this potion, elabisaris? So at this point, the Gemara wants to say that only a person who's already a saris, he's already sterile, he's allowed to drink this potion. The Gemara now rejects that too. V'omar Rabbi Chiya bar Abba Omar Rabbi Yochanan. And here we'll turn to Daf Kuf Yud Aleph Amud Aleph. Hakol Modim. Everybody agrees. In other words, even those who say that you're allowed to create a mum in a bechor, if the bechor is already a bal mum. Kigon Bechor Sheish Lo Ribui Dam. For example, if you have a Bechor that has too much Dam, and that makes it a Balmum, it's definitely going to die because of this Ribui excessive bleeding, then you're allowed to directly create a Mum in the Bechor by, let's say, puncturing and letting its blood out. And even according to that man, the Omer, who says you're allowed to make the mum in Bechor because it's already bal mum, but b'machametz acher machametz hu chayev. There's an iser lav of being machametz a mincha, carbon mincha, you're not allowed to cause fermentation. And let's say, for example, Reuven comes along and he kneads the dough of the mincha and ferments it. Then Shimon comes along, and he also does another process, which is called Aricha, b'chimutz, and then the shlishi alfa b'chimutz, they're all chayv. Shenemar lo se alfa chametz, lo se osa chametz, which means that any of the three activities or occupations in preparing the mincha, if it's done b'chimutz, each one is a separate violation. That's losh, orech, and ofer, all b'chimutz. Each one is chayav for each one of these actions. So this isra afiyah b'chametz is included in the isra siya b'chametz. So why does the Torah say that the Torah singles out lo seyofe chametz? Once it says lo seyosa chametz, why would afiyah be singled out? And the answer is a hekesh. Kedei lahakesh is kol asiyas hamincha lafiyosa. Ma afiyosa miyuchedes shehi maisa choshu bifnei atzma v'chayovan la bifnei atzma. The Torah writes afiyah independent of the other parts of the process. Is so to lisha arichosa, which are also important parts of the process. Yechayv on each one of them bifnei atzma. So imlosh v'orach. And therefore everyone agrees that Mechametz Acher Mechametz is Chayav. The Torah has a separate ribui to teach me that you're Chayav on the Asiyah of the Mincha B'chimutz. And even the Sheni who does the Aricha, after it was already Hichmetz Al Yidei Arishon, Belisha, and the Shlishi bakes it B'chimutz, they're all going to be Chayav. And then the Brisa continues and says that everybody is modeh that in the case of Misores, Achar Misores, Shuchayev, Shenemar, Umauch, Vekasus, Venasuk, Vekarus, right? The Torah gives a long list of animals that are Posel Mizbeach, and all these refer to the testicles of the animal, the male animal. They're squeezed, they're crushed, they're detached, they're cut. Imal akoros chayev, if he's liable for testicles that are cut, al nosik lo kolshkin, how much more so he should be liable for testicles that are detached. So why does the Torah have to add the word nosuk? Ela lahavi nosek achar kores, to teach us that one who detaches the testicles after someone had cut them, he's chayev. So we see that on a deraisa level, there's an isur of causing castration, and that's called isur lesares es hasoris. So therefore, you cannot say that there's a heter to permit the drinking of the kos ikrim just because he's a soris, which probably means that the Maisa Avera is itself independent, Asur as an end unto itself, even though he's already a Saris. So Ella, now we have to go back to the original question, how can we allow this potion to be drunk for the sake of jaundice when it causes castration, and to tell me that he's already castrated, that wouldn't help us. And the answer is Bizakin. A zaken who's not capable of procreation. And there's a heter lisarso, which means that even though misaris acher misaris is chayev, that's based on the gzeres hakosuv, that he became a sirus, be'isur, and now you're adding another maisa sirus. But in the case of zikna, that's not a maisa sirus, he's not molid, and therefore there's no Iser Lissarso. The Gemara is not happy about this either. Is it really true that a Zaken is Mutal Lishtos Kos Ikrin Vomar Rabbi Yochanan Hein Hein Hechiziruni Linarusi? That the Gemara has a list of Refuos in Masech the Gittin on Daf Ayin for someone who doesn't have the potency of having an intimacy. He doesn't have koach l'shamesh. And Rabbi Yochanan testifies that these refuos actually work. And even after he was older, he was able to be mishamesh. And the Gemara gives in Gittin, it gives a refuah for Misha Eniel Koch, and Rabbi Yochanan says this refuah, he testifies, worked for him in his zikna, and therefore even his zaken can always be returned back to his state of fertility. So why do you think it's a heter to be misares? Ella, who's allowed to drink a kos ikrim be isha? She doesn't have the mitzvah piri v'rivya, and she doesn't therefore she doesn't have the iser of making herself barren. The Torah says pruvu milarts v'kivshua darko shel ish lotzeis l'vachavu lichbosh. He's chayev in piri v'rivya, but isha shein darko lichbosh ena mitzuva. Memela, she doesn't have an iser sirus, because the iser sirus is shayach only as the flip side of the chi of piri v'rivya. There's a famous kasha in Minchas Chinuch here. How can we say that the Issur Sirus depends upon the mitzvah piri v'rivya when Balei Chayim also are subject to this Issur Sirus? There's no piri v'rivya by animals. And the Minchas Chinuch says that what the Gemara has in mind here is that the Torah did not prohibit Sirus in a woman at all. And the reason is not because she's not mitzvah piri v'rivya, but because the Issur Sirus only applies to an Ish and not to an Isha. So the Gemara says, Rabbi Yochanan ben Broka di Omer al Shneem, hu Omer vayvarcho sam Elohim vayomer lehem pruravu. Rabbi Yochanan ben Broka in Masechta Yevamos has a shita that even a woman is obligated in period of a rivya. And that's why the Torah says, pruravu b'loshen rabim, addressing both male and female, is Michael and Meimar. So why do we come up with this heter that she's allowed to drink a kosher ikrim if she's also obligated in period of rivia? She should be included in the Issur Sirus, because anyone who's included in period of rivia is ipso facto included in the Issur Sirus. So Gemara answers Bizakena, that she's an older woman and she's past menopause and she's not subject to the Issur Sirus, because she's not included now in period of rivia, she doesn't have the capacity. And here we're not going to say what we said by Rabbi Yochanan, that an older man could somehow have a refuah and regain his koach l'shamish. That doesn't apply in the case of a zekena, eino chozer l'katmusa, except for the case of Sara b'mnes, inami ba'kara, or in the case of a woman who's barren. There's no Issur Sirus in that case. And there's no what we call Masaris Achar Masaris, because she was barren, she wasn't Re'uya L'Holid. And only in the case of a Saris, who was Royal L'Holid, and then he was Nistaris, then there's an Issur L'Saris L'Shuv. The Gemara could have actually given an answer that we're talking about an Akar, who is never capable of procreation, and there would be no Issur Sirus, and that would have been another answer. So when the Gemara says Ela be'isha, that Isha is not mitzvah pirvia rivia, and therefore she's not included in Issur Sirus, that was the Gemara's answer above. But Rabbi Yochanan Broka, who holds that an Isha is yetaka mitzvah pirvia rivia, there is an Issur Sirus, and it's only in the case of Akara Meolam, she was always barren, she was never Ruya Laholid, she's not included in the Issur Sirus. And the same would apply, as we said before, to an Akar, a man who was always barren and he was never Ruya Laholid. And this leads us to the next Mishnah here on Daf Kuf Yud Aleph, from an Aleph. And the Mishnah is going to continue with the laws of refuah on Shabbos. Hachoshesh b'shinov, he has a toothache. Lo yigama b'hen es hachometz, he should not gargle or fill up his mouth with vinegar, because again, that's not something that a bari would normally do to be megamea chometz, and therefore it's clear that he's doing it for refuah. Aval mitabel hu kedarko, what he can do to sort of as an act of subterfuge, in other words, to get around this, he could take his piece of bread and he could dip it into vinegar, and then im nisrapi nisrapi, if he hopefully will get better, then that's fine. Hachoshesh bimosnav, he has pains in his loins, is lo yosef yain v'chometz. He shouldn't do a sicha, some sort of an anointment with wine or oil, because with wine or vinegar, my mistake, because that certainly is only derech refuah, but sachu es hashemen, he can use oil, because some people will use oil even if they don't have these pains. And the lo shemen vered, but not the oil from a rose, because apparently rose oil is something that is boiled, when you take the rose, you boil for many days, and it's very rare and expensive. People don't usually anoint themselves with rose oil except for therapeutic purposes. Hu yakar v'ena matzui, v'ein derech b'riyim l'sucho. Now, b'nei malachim, princes, sachin shemin vered al malkoseim, they're allowed to anoint their wounds with this rose oil, shekein darkam losu pechol, because even on a weekday, the princes will smear rose oil on their bodies because they can afford to anoint themselves with this expensive rose oil just for the pleasure of it, even if they're not wounded at all. The Gemara asks a kasha on our Mishnah. Rami le Rav Acha Aricha. Aricha du Rav Acha bar Popol Rabbi Avohu. So we have a kasha here that's being raised by Rav Acha, who's the tall one, Aricha, who's the same as Rav Acha bar Papa. And he points out this question to Rabbi Avohu, Tanan. Our Mishnah says, HaChoshesh B'Shinov is lo yigameh b'emes hachometz. He's not allowed to gargle with this vinegar. Is l'memer d'chometz mali l'shinayim. The premise seems to be that vinegar is good for the teeth. Vaksiv, the pasuk in Mishlei says, "Kachometz lashinayim, like vinegar to the teeth, ke'ashan leinayim, like smoke to the eyes." And the pasuk goes on to say, "Kein ha'atzel sholchov, so is the lazy person to whom they send him." But it seems clearly that just like vinegar is smoke is obviously damaging to the eyes, so too vinegar is damaging to the teeth. Lokasha. There are two types of vinegar. The chometz, ha in the posuk, which is not good for the teeth, that's bikiyua de peri. That comes from the acid juice of an unripe fruit. And it's anovim shalonis bashlu ben kol tzarka. But ha, in our Mishnah, the vinegar is bechala. It was made from good wine that became fermented, and that's healthy for the teeth. Ibois ema, another possible answer is haba bechala, that the pasuk and the Mishnah are talking about chometz, which is made from very good wine that fermented. But there's no question why. Ha, the Mishnah is talking about the ika maka. He has a wound. And ha, the leka maka. And the Gemara explains what this means. Ika maka, if he has a wound, then chometz mase, the vinegar that's made from this wine vinegar, is healthy and therapeutic for his maka. But leka maka is merape. If he doesn't have a wound, then vinegar loosens the teeth, merapi, makes it soft, and it separates the teeth, and that surely is not healthy for the teeth. It shrinks the gums, loosens the teeth. And this reminds me just of a story that Rav Soloveitchik tells in the Ish Halacha, his essay, Halachic Man, about Rav Chaim's mashal, when they came around to ask Rav Chaim to introduce the study of Musar into Brisk, and Rav Chaim said, well, I'll give you a mashal of castor oil. Castor oil is very good if you need it and you're sick. But if you don't need it, you don't have intestinal diseases, then castor oil is like the worst thing for your stomach. Lo yigameh bahem esachometz. If somebody has bad teeth pains, he should not be sipping this vinegar. Vasanya. We have a brisa that says about a choshesh b'shit of lo yigameh upolet. He's not allowed to gargle with the vinegar and spit it out, but megameh upolet. But he's allowed to swallow the vinegar, because then it doesn't become obvious that he's doing it for refuah purposes. Now, the Mishnah seems to give a unqualified, absolute statement that you're not allowed to be megamea even if he swallows it. Om Rabbi ki tananami masnisin b'megamea upole tanan. That the Mishnah only prohibits when he takes the vinegar into his mouth and then he spits it out. That's already clearly for the purpose of refuah. My Rava gives another answer, an alternative. Afilu tem b'mgamea b'lola. Even if the Mishnah is talking about a case where he swallows the vinegar, kan in the Brisa we're talking about lifnei tibul, but in the Mishnah, kan liachar tibul. So if you're before tibul, before he eats and he dips his bread into the vinegar, then he's allowed to swallow the chometz, because then it's not clear that he does it for a fuah, because many people will dip their bread into chometz on a regular basis. So the person will say that, you know what, he's probably dipping his bread into the vinegar, and he's gonna eat the vinegar. But Khan, in our Mishnah, we're talking about liachar tibul. He's already eaten, and he's already dipped his bread into the vinegar, and now it becomes absolutely clear that if he takes vinegar into his mouth, even if he swallows it, he's doing it for the purpose of refuah. So the Gemara now is a kasha on Rava, v'neima midalifnei tibul shari. Is liachar tibul nami shari? Why don't we say that if it's before tibul, he's allowed to, as we said, take the vinegar into his mouth and swallow it, then we should apply the same logic liachar tibul. It should also be mutar, because we never found that something is asur for part of Shabbos and it's mutar for the other part, and it's mutar for the other part of Shabbos. The Shamina Leila Rava, we've heard Rava say that the Islay, he holds like those who say Hoil Vehuta Bishabis, Huta Afli Yom HaKippurim, the Yom Rava Leka Midi de Bishabis Shariv Yom HaKippurim Asur, Hoil de Bishabis Shariv Yom HaKippurim Nami Shari. So we don't find anything that is mutar on Shabbos, and yet it's also on Yom HaKippurim. And Rav is talking about tevila on Yom HaKippurim. And since tevila is mutar on Shabbos, then tevila has to be mutar on Yom Kippur, because it can't be something that's also on Shabbos and is mutar. I'm sorry, that's mutar on Shabbos and is also on Yom Kippur. And just like you're allowed to be tovil on Shabbos, that's not nirikim etakin atzvah b'tefillah. It looks like he's just cooling off in the water. So to on Yom Kippur, even though Yom Kippur normally is asur b'rechitza, and everybody knows that he's dipping into the tefillah in order to be misakin himself, he's not cooling off, but nevertheless it's mutter. Why? Because since it's mutter on Shabbos, therefore it's mutter on Yom Kippur. So let's apply the same thing with regard to tibul, that Rava says that if you don't have something that's also on part of the Shabbos and it's mutter on the other part of the Shabbos, so if you're going to tell me that he's allowed to be megameah the chometz and swallow it before tibul, before he dips his bread in, then it should be mutter even after tibul. And the Gemara says, Hodebe Rav Mihach. Rav actually withdrew his statement distinguishing between swallowing the vinegar before tibul and swallowing it after tibul. If it's mutter before tibul, then it's mutter after tibul as well. And therefore, Rav is going to have to accept the answer, the reconciliation of Abaye, that in our Mishnah we're talking about a case where he took the vinegar into his mouth and he spit it out, and that's clear refuah. Now the Gemara wants to know, how do we know that Rava actually rescinded his answer here? Maybe he rescinded his principle as he formulated it with regard to Tevila on Yom HaKippurim, the Hoil, that we said that once it's Hutav Shabbos, it's Mutter on Yom HaKippurim as well. That's a kind of my chazis. Mimai de Mahach, Hoderbe, that he was chosebo from his answer here about Gmiya, Dilma Me'ahi de Hoderbe, maybe he rescinded his heter tevil on Yom HaKippur, and he rejected his original position of Hol Mutav Shabbos, therefore it must be Mutter on Yom HaKippur. Maybe he doesn't hold from Hoil, and therefore on Yom HaKippurim it's also to be Tovil, even though on Shabbos it's Mutter. And once he was chosen from that, then we go back to his teretz of our Mishnah to be Mechalik between Gmiyas Chometz Kodem Achila, before he had his Suda, as opposed to Gmiyas Chometz after his Suda. So my answer is Lo Salke Daitach. That's not even a possibility, that Rava rejected or rescinded his heter for tefillah on Yom HaKippurim. The sign you have a brisa, kol chayove tefillos, tolin kedarkon bein betishavah bein v'yom HaKippurim. And clearly you see that you're allowed to be tovel on Yom HaKippurim, and the brisa is reflecting this underlying principle of hol b'shabbos mutter gam v'yom HaKippurim mutter, and therefore we have to assume that Rava was chozer bo from the teretz of Kodem Tibul and Liachar Tibul. The Mishnah says, Achoshesh b'masnav, if he has some sort of wounds and pains in his loins, then he's not allowed to use wine or vinegar for sicha to anoint his body, but he's allowed to use shemen, with the exception, of course, of rose oil. And the B'nai Melachim are even allowed to use rose oil to anoint on their makkah on Shabbos, because that's what they do even on Chol. Rabbi Shimon Omer, Kol Yisrael B'nai Melachim. So this is the part of the Mishnah that we skipped before, mostly because we weren't sure exactly what the Mishnah has in mind, but let's just translate it. All of Israel are princes, and therefore any Jew can apply rose oil to his wounds on Shabbos. It means that according to Rav Shimon, we don't discriminate between different groups. So it's permitted for one group, it has to be permitted for another group. Omar Rabbi Abba Bar Zavda Marav Halacha Ki Rabbi Shimon, that anyone is allowed to anoint himself with rose oil on Shabbos. The Gemara asks Kash on Rav, Lemeimer de Rav Ki Rabbi Shimon Sfirale, are you telling me that Rav embraces the Shita of Shimon, named that Kol Yisrael B'nai Melachim, we don't discriminate between different groups. Omar Rav Shimi Barchia Mishmei de Rav, Haim Esuchraisa de Nezaisa, what they did was they had a barrel of wine, and instead of a spigot, what they used to clog up and then open the wine barrel was they put in into the hole, they put a piece of cloth. And Rav is quoted as saying, that this cloth, since it becomes saturated with the wine that's in the barrel, then you're not allowed to tighten this cloth and use it as a kind of a bimkom spigot. And why is that so? Osel aduke biyoma tava, even on yontif, you're not allowed to push or squeeze this piece of cloth into its place, and certainly not on Shabbos. And this becomes a melacha with a dover she'eino miskaven, which Rabbi Shimon allows, and yet Rav prohibits it. It means that Rav does not accept the shita of Rabbi Shimon, and his kulos legabi Shabbos is lo ki Rabbi Shimon, but rather Rav embraces the shita of Rabbi Yehuda that a davar she'eino miskaven is asur. And the Gemara is assuming that Rav, to summarize Rashi, eino sover b'chol hilchos Shabbos ki Rabbi Shimon. So why in the case of Shemin Vered does he paskin like Rabbi Shimon? And the Gemara answers, Bahi afilu Rabbi Shimon moda. Rabbi Shimon is moda in the case of Mesukhraya din Azaisa, because that's a psikresha. The Abai v'Rava, the Amrit Shavayu, moda Rabbi Shimon psikresha v'lo yomos. So when Rav expressed the formulated the halacha that it's also to do this on Shabbos, he wasn't paskin like Rabbi Yehuda. He was accepting Rabbi Shimon, but the exception to Rabbi Shimon is the case where you chop off the head of an animal and you're saying, well, you didn't have kavanah, the animal would die. It's definitely going to die. And that's like miskamin. Here too, when he's mahadik the nekev, b'piachavis, then certainly he knows that some of the liquids that are saturated in the cloth are definitely be squeezed out. That's huavada yischot. And therefore, it's a definite violation of schita. And here we have to introduce schita mishum libun. And we could talk about that as a separate topic. So the Gemara says, how can you tell me that Rav Paskins like Rav Shimon, Vom Rav Chia, Barashi, Rav Halacha, Kirab Yehuda? So we have a tradition in the name of Rav, then in the Dover Shadim is coming with Paskin like Rabbi Yehuda. And Fakir it's Shmuel, it's Rav Hanan Bar Ami Omer Shmuel who Paskin's halacha ki Rabbi Shimon, that Dover Shadim is coming is Mutter. Rav Chia Bar Ovin Masni lay below Gavri. He has this Psak halach without names. We don't have the names of the Amoroim that was said in the name of Rav and Shmuel, but rather Rav Omer halacha Kirab Yehudu, Shmuel Amar Halacha, Kirab Shimon. So we see explicitly that Rav Paskins like Rabbi Yehuda. And once again, we're stuck with the din of Rav in the case of Shemin Vered, the rose oil, where he Paskins like Rabbi Shimon. El Amar Rava. Rava rather offers another answer. Aniva Risha Bachabura Tagamina. Umanu Rabbi Chiyabar Ovin, Halacha, Kirab Shimon, Velav Mitame. The halacha that Rav accepts Rav Shimon with regard to the rose oil is not because of the logic of Rabbi Shimon, but Rav actually holds in the case of Shemin Vered not like the logic of Rabbi Shimon. He was matir sicha b'Shemin Vered for a different reason. And even though he paskins in general in Hilchos Shabbos like Rabbi Yehuda, but here for a different reason, he was matir. So what does that mean? My halacha of Shimon v'lav mitame. What does this mean? Ilema halacha k'Rabbi Shimon d'shari v'lav mitame. If you're saying that halacha is like Rabbi Shimon, that you're allowed to anoint with this rose oil, but not for his reason. De'ilu Rabbi Shimon savar masi, that rose oil is therapeutic and therefore it's mutter. And that's based on the principle of Kol Yisrael B'nei Melachim Heim. In other words, you can't say it's also for somebody and it's mutter for somebody else. Or the other way around. You can't say something's mutter for one person, it's also to someone else. But Rav disagrees with Reb Shimon, and he holds that it's also if it's indeed therapeutic, but Sovar, But rather, Rav holds that Shemin Verit is lo mase, that it doesn't have any therapeutic value, and therefore it's mutter. So the Gemara says, is it possible that Rav holds Sova Rav about Shemin Verit, that lo mase, it's not therapeutic, for Amidik Tani? It says in the Mishnah, B'nei B'lochim Sochim Al Gabi Makoseim Shemin Verit, that the princes will use this rose oil and anoint it on their makos, on their wounds, michal demasi, apparently because it is therapeutic. So even the Tanakama, who holds that Shemin Vered is merape, but yet you can be sakin on a mako, why would that be mutter? Elo, but rather, says the Gemara, locha ki Rabbi Shimon deshari vilav mitame. To Ilu Rav Shimon Sov Rafa Gav de lo Shchiach Shori Rav Sov Yishiach Ini lo Shchiach lo Ubi Asr de Rav Shchiach Mishcha de Varda. So it means the following, that Rabbi Shimon was matir for a different reason. According to Rav Shimon, it's not common, it's not motzui, that you should have this rose oil. And in Rabbi Shimon's area, they didn't do sicha with this rose oil. It was very expensive. And therefore, it was crystal clear to everyone that he's doing it for refuah purposes. And yet, despite that, Rabbi Shimon, was matir, based on the fact that for the B'nai Malachim, it was mutter because they do it during the week. So we have this principle of Kol Yisrael B'nai Malachim. Rav holds that if Shemin Vered would be Matsui and most people would use it, let's say they in that area they have access to, you know, a large, it's very available, law of supply and demand, and they use Shemin Vered, is then everyone's allowed to use this sicha on Shabbos of Shemin Vered. Lo shchiach, then it'd be also losuch vivenu. And indeed, in the asra of Rav, it was shchiach mishcha devardo. It was quite motzi, quite common that they would anoint themselves with rose oil, and therefore it's not muchach. Nobody could sell his nikar that he's doing it for refuah, and therefore Rav was matir Shemin Vered. But it's not because he holds like Rabbi Shimon. He just is talking about a different mitzius than that which Rabbi Shimon was addressing. In Rabbi Shimon's mitzius, it wasn't shchiach, and therefore Rabbi Shimon had to come up with a new heter, and that's because of Kol B'nai Yisrael B'nai Malach. Rav, on the other hand, was addressing a different mitzius in his local town, where it was quite common to use Shemin Vered. Maybe it wasn't so expensive, etc., etc., and therefore it's not nikar that it's a medicinal refuah act, and that's why Rav was mati. But it has nothing to do with Rabbi Shimon. Hadran Alecha Shmona Shrotzim. We now have completed the 14th parak of Shabbos, which is Shmona Shrotzim. We're up to the 15th parak, which is Eluk Sharim, and that's going to deal with the malacha of kosher. The eluk sharm shechayoven alehem, and these are the knots for which you chay from aleches kosher, kesher agmalim, and we're talking about camel drivers. They are professionals that make a permanent knot. The kesher asfanim and sailors' knots. So these are examples of knots that come under the Mishnah and Kol Gadol of Meleches Kosher. And as we said before, we need a Kesher Shel Kayoma. And that was done in the Mishkan when they tied together torn threads in the curtains of the Mishkan. And the Gemara is going to go into the nature of all these knots. The Mishnah then formulates a rule, and that is k'shem shu chayev al kishuron, just like he's chayev for tying these knots, is chayev al heteron, he is so too chayev on untying the knots. And in the Mishkan, when they trapped the chilazon, then sometimes they would have to untie the knots of the nets in order to readjust them for the desired size. Now, once in the Mishkan, permanent knots were untied, then you're chayav for untying permanent knots. Rabbi Meir Omer, he has a principle called Kol Keshesh Yochel Atiro Biachas Miyodov Ein Chayovin Olov. If the Kesher is such that with one finger, with one hand, he can untie the knot, that proves positive that it cannot be a permanent knot. The Gemara says, "My Kesher Agmalim, the Kesher Asfanim." What are these knots that are made by the camel drivers or the sailors? Now, just a little bit of background here. A camel's nose was pierced and a leather strap was inserted into the pierced hole. Now, the ends of that strap were knotted to form some sort of a ring. That ring was used to tie a leash to the ring to secure the camel and tie it down to a post or wherever he tied it down to prevent it from running away. The knot that connected the leash to the ring was a temporary knot. Sometimes it was untied to release the camel. Now, on the one hand, the knot that was tied to this ring was permanent, and that was a Keshesh Shel Kayoma. The knot that connected the leash to the ring, that was a Keshesh Eino Shel Kayoma. Now, in the case of a ship, we also have a parallel mirror image of these two categories, a permanent and a temporary knot. So when we talk about the prow of a ship, P-R-O-W, that was punctured so that a piece of wicker could be inserted therein, knotted to form a permanent ring. So that was a permanent knot. Now, when they wanted to tie the ship in place at the dock, then the sailors would tie a long rope to the ship's ring. And when the ship moved on, the knot connecting that long rope to the ship's ring was untied, and that becomes a Keshesh She'eino Shel Kayoma. So the Gemara now inquires as to which of these knots the Mishnah is referring to when it says Kesher Agmal V'Kesher Asfanim Ilei Mekitra Dekatri Bizmoma. If it means the knot that was tied through the nose ring in order to attach the leash to the nose ring, the Kitra Dekatri Beistida, and in the case of the ship, it was the knot that was tied through the ship's ring connecting the anchor of the ship to the rope, Hai Keshesh Eino Shel Kayoma. In both cases, these are not permanent knots. Ella, but rather we have no choice, we have to assume Kitra Dizmama Gufe. We're talking about the knot that would tie the nose ring onto the nose of the camel. Or in the case of the ship, the Isterida Gufa, the knot that would tie down the ship's ring to the prow of the ship. And that was permanent. Rabbi Meir Omer, Kol Kesher, if you can untie a knot with one hand, then it's not considered a Kesher Shel Kayoma. Boy, Rav, Ach de Boy, Achve demar acha, so we have a suffix here of Rav Ach de Voi, Anival Rabbi Meir Mahu. What's the status of a bow according to Rabbi Meir? And one would say for sure it's mutter, because time the Rabbi Meir Mishum di Yochalatir Biachas Miyodov. Vohanami, also in the case of a bow, you can untie the bow with one hand, and therefore you should be potter. O Dilma, shall we say time the Rabbi Meir Mishum de Lomahadik? He's talking about a knot which is not tied properly. It's not tight. And therefore you can easily untie it with one hand. But ha, in the case of a bow, mihadak, it's tied properly. It's tight. And therefore you should be chayev. Teku in the Gemara leaves this as an open-ended question. Now, here in the Vesifta, we have a few diagrams that we'll get to now, and that's going to be the case of Kesher Shalgavi Kesher. So if you take a look at this diagram, you'll see that he ties one string into the other, and then he takes the two ends and he ties it again on top. That's very tight, and you can't remove it with one hand. In the case of Aniva, which you'll see, it has that loop that goes up into another loop, into another circle, another ring, then it's very easy to pull it away. But as you tighten this, it's very tight. And that remains an Ibai Delo Ifshita, and the Gemara doesn't have any final conclusion. Now later on Kuf Yud Gimel, we're going to see that there's machlokes between Rabbi Yehuda and the Chachamim about the status of a bow. The Chachamim say it's mutter, Rabbi Yehuda says it's us. Now we have another Mishnah to learn on this daf. Yesh lecha ksharim she'ein chayoven aleihem. In other words, there's certain knots that you tie and you don't incur a chiv chatos. Kekesher hagmalim ukesher hasafanim. And these are not similar to the knots of the camel drivers and the sailors, but nevertheless, even though they're not do raisa, but they're osur min rabbanan. Kosheris Isha Miftach Chaluka. A woman is allowed to tie the opening of her garment, and this is a chaluka. Now, this is a garment that opens in the front. It has two straps that extend from the top of each corner. The right strap was tied over the left shoulder, the left strap over the right shoulder, and that would close the garment. This knot is made to be tied and untied the very same day. And therefore, it's not at all similar to the kesher shalkayoma of the doraisa. Therefore, materes, and therefore, kosheres miftach haluka. Here's another case of a kesher that's mutter lechatchila, to tie and untie, and that's chutei svacha. If you remember, we spoke about a svacha, a hat that a woman wears on top of her hair, and the strings of this hair are almost like a reshet, a net around her hair. V'shel psikya, or for example, a girdle, which is openings that have flaps that are folded down, and then they're tied. It's chagura rechava sheyesh barosha chutim kedei lekasher likshar osam bahem, and all this is mutar v'chein kosherin haritzuos shel minol v'shel sandal, and likewise, it's permissible to tie the straps of a shoe or a sandal. A shoe is made of soft leather. A sandal is made of hard leather. That's the difference between the two. And nodo shel yayin v'shemen, these are canteens that are made of leather for wine or for oil. V'kofifin espiem v'koshin osam. So they fold over the opening, right? The cloth that closes them, and they tie them. Ukderish al basar. Sometimes you put on a pot of meat a piece of cloth or a beged. And in all these cases, it's mutalikshar because you take them apart on a daily basis, and therefore it's not at all similar to a kesher shel kayom. However, we have to add a whole nother category of kesher that's mutal lechatchila, and that's Rabbi Elezer ben Yaakov Omer, kosherim lifnei abehema Bishvil she lo teitze. That you have a chevel, a rope, and this rope is berochav ha-pesach. So it's the front of the stall. The animal is in the stall, and you'll have to close this stall in order to guarantee that the animal doesn't go out. And that's a kesher, again, that's open and closed on a regular basis. However, there are complications here in terms of meleches tzeda. Now the Gemara asks a kasha, her gufa kasha. This Mishnah has a difficulty in and of itself. Amrit, it says at the beginning, Yesh Ksharm She'en Chayov and Alem Ki Kesha Gemara and Kesha Ksaponit, which implies Chiyuva Hudaleka Ha Isura Mia Ika, that although there's no violation of the biblical Molacha Dorais of Kesher, because these are not permanent, but nevertheless there are Asur Midrabbanan. For Hadatani, and now it has a whole list of ksharim that are mutter, like for example, kosheres isha miftach chaluka, which means hafilu chatchila, and there's no isid rabbanon. So the Gemara answers, hachi kamer, this is what the Mishnah has in mind. Yesh ksharim she'en chayov in alem. There are ksharim which, although they don't meet up to the standard of a kesher melacha doraisa with a chiyuv chatas, and they're not similar to a kesher gemalim and kesher sfanim, but nevertheless it's also chatchila. Umay nihu, and which are those ksharim that are osur midrabbanon? Kitra, here we're up to daf kuf yud beis. Kitra de katri bizmama. This is a kesher that they tie a ritsua, a rucha, very long strap, to a tabas, and that's how they tie the strap to the, you know, down, you know, connecting the strap to the animal's mouth, and that's to guarantee that the animal doesn't run away. Or in its parallel case, in the case of a sail of a ship, is kitra the katri bis terida. They tie down this ritsua into the tabas that's on the top of the boat, and what they do is they tie this down so that the boat will be docked securely and it won't float away. Now chiyuva hudaleka, and these kinds of ksharim, there's no chiyuv chatos because it's not a permanent kesher, but isura ika. This is very similar to a real bona fide kesher da'oraisa with a malacha and a chiyuv chatos, because sometimes they leave this kesher tied up for a week or 2 weeks, so it has a certain element of, excuse me, of permanence to it. And just to review that last point, when you have a kesher that's going to last for a week or two, then we're going to say, although it's still considered temporary, it's not kavua and it's not doraisa, but nevertheless, it's going to be usur midrabbanan. However, the Mishnah adds, Yeshem utarm lechatchila, maininu, and what's the description, the profile of those ksharim that are mutar lechatchila, that's already kosheres miftachei chaluka, which is derech latiram b'chol yom v'yom. On a daily basis, you take them apart. Obviously, there'll be a gray area here. What happens if you have a kesher that you take out every 2 days or 3 days? And that's going to be an issue in the poskim. And now the Mishnah goes on to ask the Gemara goes on to ask the question, what was the chiddush of kosheres isha miftach chaluka pshita? Certainly it would be mutter to take apart this kesher, since she takes it apart on a daily basis. Why did the Mishnah feel compelled to tell us this? The Sfasemis doesn't understand exactly why the Gemara asks Pshita, because we don't know yet until the Mishnah that there's a Hetel Chatchila on any Kesher. The Mishnah is establishing a new category that in the case of a Kesher Matir B'chol Yom, it's Mutar L'Chatchila. So the Mesifta quotes a Birchas Avram, who gives the following answer, that Ma'isim B'chol Yom Shayu Osim K'sharim Ke'elu. We know that on a daily basis, women would put on these cloaks, take them, you know, tie them and untie them. I mean, it would be a gzeira shein rov atzibri chom lamod ba. Lo tzricha de isle trei doshi. That this chalok has two openings, and it's open in the front, and in order to close it, you need two straps, two what's called zugo shalishonos, one on top and one lower down, and each zug has its own lashon on the right side and a lashon on the left side, so that even if she's matir one of them, she could be able to remove the garment again bedochak. So mal detem, I might think chadabinaya bituli mevatel kamash molon. So let's try to understand the Mao de Tema, this Havamin. You might think that perhaps the woman should leave out one of the straps, which are tied permanently, that she might leave one of the straps. She has two openings with two straps. And the Havamin was that maybe a woman would sometimes leave one of the straps tied permanently. And therefore, that one knot that she ties permanently would be prohibited. Kamash Malon, the Mishnah wants to teach us that the tying of each knot is permissible. And here we have an interesting comment of the Ran. He says that since one of these two knots would be left tied permanently, and we don't know which one it is, then both of them should be prohibited under the law of Suffolk. However, the Gemara's Maskon is that we're not concerned with this possibility. We assume that both straps will be untied on a daily basis. So that would make the process of donning and removing this beged, this garment, easier. That makes it easier, because if she only unties one of the two straps, then you know what? It's going to be very difficult for her to put on the beged and take it off. It's not really comfortable. Okay, then. So we got to Daf Kuf Yud Beis Amud Aleph. Let's stop here with Chute Svacha, and that's the two dots that are 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 lines down from the top.